green del pie. Picture this. A girl in a green field. There is no perspective. All is flattened where she walks, turned from you. Her face doesn't matter. It's the back of her head that counts. She's etched on the screen inside, slinking sometimes out, feet and face at odds, lank and colourless, blindly reaching towards this new body. Rehouse, avatar, replicate me. For all her walking, she has no direction, and the aspects of this green have no names. The nearest would be fingers, clumps, spatters, tufts, sun speckles, grasshopper leaps. She never even bends deep to see frogs. It's enough for her to crouch like one of them, feel the brush of the meadow on her thighs, be an unquestioned eye of the sun's kindling. Grows larger, yes, but the instrument stands while the note is raised or bent. You will not hear her in the audience when the titter is general. You will not see her shoulders shake, still sell in the great unbrokered. Lately, she has seen a frog and recognized it as a promise, its leaf-like markings. She whispered, "Don't catch it. Don't box it. Don't give it to the dog to smell. Don't you know that all things, however embedded, have a beat and hold to themselves, greenly, simply?" Thank you. My first collection was The Making of a Pagan, and it's now been republished in a new edition with an unpublished, previously unpublished sequence of 18 poems, and I'll be doing poems from that book tonight. It's called Pagan to the Core. The word paganus, pagan, originally meant generally not us, you know, not Greek, not Christian, not Jew. So it's appropriate because I suppose in many ways I've never felt myself anything in particular. I'm going to start off with a few. The idea, the whole thrust of my first collection was to produce poems that encapsulate moments of experience in styles that reflect that experience as closely as possible. So I was looking for the feel and the rhythm of the experiences. So it's a series of moments from childhood and right up to the stage of adulthood I was at the time. So these are a few from the childhood stage. Escape of country. In all the gathered globe, never was a country like this. This is green, below red, below yellow, below white, below blue. Down the Boreen, hedges hoard clusters of lush, places for fairies to sleep, fairies tiny as pintips. Tonight, the moon will rise like a piece of furs fleeing from a hill fire. It will turn the sky. Highwayman blue. Mother. Clack go the glasses down on her nose. Rat tongue go her false teeth. Suck, suck, suck on a thread. To thread a needle. To turn a hem. To shorten a dress for me. Swallow, say eyes in a goldfish bowl. National health doesn't care. They brace me up. Deface me. Open me. Wipe my hair. A peach dress. Blue and white day and a peach dress. Oh, and a cuddly black, smooth black and brown and white dog. And a white cat with his one blue eye and his one green eye. And waking up to the purr, purr, purr of blackie deep among the sheep. Bock, clack, whir against the wall. I am Billie Jean King, I know them all. White dresses and all, dresses, I cut them from paper and hang them on dolls. White with golden stars, pale pink, midnight blue and a lime green. I will marry in lime green, like a wild nymph, fresh from the woods, still damp. I will marry my only. I will dance for you, Daddy. 1, 2, 3, and a 1, 2, 3, and a ballet bounce, and a twirl, and a pirouette. Sardines. Our house is divided. One side for him, one for all of us. It's like these sardines. I'm twisting their key to let them out, to let me in. Like he twists her key, and she moves like he says, and she stays in at night. Like I'd like to twist a knife in his gut, especially on Fridays, with one tin for him and one for all of us. Mother shades and beat. Down where the shades are, I pray her not fade into. Days now, she hardly hears a need I speak. A step toward is a step in wake of a weird wind. I pray her not rescind her helping smile, her sounding look, that now seem look away. White steps, white day, steep white mountain. Jump stair to see her, jump stair to see her, jump stair to see. Standing at the tip top, pale eyed speaker of the end of the low bend. No, she is not away. No, she is not away. No, she is not. Oh, come, black hole in ashen day. Skirl, scrape, suck away all that colours, flowers, stands, and lift me high to heaviside, to bolt and thunder, spark and geezer, sweat and swelter, wave and ray, galloping drumbeat, hip-hop tumble, harmonic pulses, all in the body, leg thrum, hand thrum, eye in a vibrate, vamp in the flesh pack. Where do I fly? Fly to home, where she is less a beating, face a vision. Can I kiss a face that's brazen? She's abating. She is meat. She is dead beat. She is dead beat. She is beaten dead. She is beaten dead. She is beaten. She is beat. She is dead. Last year I also had published a book called Savage Solitude, which is here. The book is about, meant to be a study of solitude, well, it is a study of solitude, but and it's a prose work. I originally meant to write a series of meditations, thoughts on the lone state for people who were alone. When I came to write it, I found that I wanted to enter the experience and communicate that, and also to do a lot of research on the subject, to bring research to the subject matter. So what emerged was a series of colloquies and reflections or fragments. It's meant to be a resource, so there is a bibliography. There are 303 fragments, and that's a symbolic number, being the three of the inner voices, the inner conversation, and the zero, or the egg, of the self, the supposed unit that is the self. So there are 202 quotations from a whole range of sources, psychoanalysts, neuroscientists, poets, mystics, fiction writers, and others. Parts one and two are colloquies. You can read a page on its own as a separate unit, or else read it right through. There is a progression, in fact, from first part through to the third. So there are three voices. As anybody who's been alone or feeling isolated at any point, it's not about silence, because there's always chatter in the head. In fact, the chatter is clamorous. So the three voices are one, which is the voice of the instinctual self, the fearful instinctual self, the huddled self, if you like. And it doesn't have language, but it does for the sake of the book, for the purposes of the book. Then the second voice is the other, and the other consists of quotations, because no matter how isolated you are, you're not actually isolated. There is history, there are genes, there is the environment. And you may not be listening, but there are many people talking, and possibly to you. Then the third voice is I, and that's the voice of the determining part of the self. In the third part of the book, I rises, is the only voice. It rises to synthesize the other two. So I'm just going to read a few of the colloquies from part one and two. Number 44. Equivocal. One. They demand enthusiasm. They are totally involved. They speak passion and immersion. They love another, a country, a subject, an activity. They plumb the eyes for something unequivocal. They will not find it. One pretends or retreats into familiar solitude. The other. I sit outside my own door for four seasons. I am tolerant of all weathers. I see the leaf go back to the ground. I am impartial to growth and death. Michael Hartnett, Doe 16. I. Life is less a passion than a plod. I've attempted to immerse myself, but floundered in lack of faith and insufficient fact. From where I stand, the options are multifarious, each too valid for exclusion. Involvement makes one forget oneself. Excessive involvement makes one forget the world. 106. Complex green. The other. I am no more lonely than a single mullein or dandelion in a pasture, or a bean leaf, or sorrel, or a horsefly, or a humblebee. I am no more lonely than the millbrook, or a weathercock, or the north star, or the south wind, or an April shower, or a January thaw, or the first spider in a new house. Henry David Thoreau, Walden. One. The silence, the simple green, has never been enough, though it has followed one everywhere as if spun from the body. When people say, look, the light, isn't it lovely? Look, isn't it a beautiful evening? One wants to break something. A life of ambient stillness does not seem to still the innards. I. Whether we wear the ring or not, we are wedded to green. Who hears us out in space? What do our clangings and arguments mean out there? What space is to us, we are to green. If we were to explore the components of the evening, enter the apparent stillness and study its particles, we would find that there is argument everywhere. 95. Selfish. 1. Is there merit or sense in living just for oneself? A good meal is prepared. The living space is decorated. The skin is bathed and oiled. Without another to appreciate, these seem like pathetic, empty acts. The other. Where is the point in maintaining a body that no one touches? And why would you choose a nice hotel bedroom if you have to sleep there alone? I could only, like so many who had finally been defeated despite their sniggers and their grimaces, bow down. Immense and admirable, undoubtedly, was the power of love. Michel Houellebecq, The Possibility of an Island. I. What's done alone seems halved in value and gives rise to ache. But the parameters of value are ill-defined. could I adopt the Buddhist or absurdist approach, allowing all phenomena an underlying emptiness? Then my actions would be worthwhile and worthless, performed with equanimity. I might even be happy, feeling into each moment like an exploring child. Thank you. My new sequence in Pig Into the Core revisits the territory of the first collection in a way, but with a very different view. And it wasn't intended to do that. I was asked to write some poems about Dublin for Imran and the Irish Language Bilingual Festival in Dublin. And when I started to try and write poems about Dublin, I found I had to go back to pre-Dublin, to why I just couldn't get it without going right back to Newcastle West, where I grew up, and the change. So this sequence is really about the transition from rural to urban. And of course, in Ireland, we don't really have a real city as such. You know, I mean, it all is so small. Dublin is not a city compared with European cities, and certainly not to cities in the east. You know, but still, the transition was big, and the transition was important, and I couldn't wait to get there. The sequence is called The Disaffected Country Girl and a Minor Metropolis. So I'd like to do a few poems from that sequence. And as I say, it's about the clash of the rural and the urban, but also about the synthesis of rural and urban. You know, we talk about the natural and the artificial, or we see nature versus city, but in fact, is the city any less nature? We produce it, in a sense it's like our extended phenotype. So that sort of theme comes into this sequence quite a bit. A minor metropolis. She wanted to ride on the back of the world, and here was her creature. No dumb-shoed hooves or tangled fur, no hay-baked breath. She had read her Joyce and O'Brien and latched. Here she had food without oven smells. McDonald's was Mecca for cheapened protein. Coins glugged in the tidal drive of theatre, clubs, Indian skirts and beer. She snuffled and picked up the whiff of an answer. The end of a tunnel shimmered ahead. Steel or water, portal or foil. Finding a thread on O'Connell Street, she followed the clue. Followed it badly, confounded by mazes internal. Stuttering genes or history's hidden bonds, believed herself bound by no rule or reason, untied to career definition. Here was the head in a stupor, making legends of drunken romances, giving credence where nothing was due, currying virtue, believed herself God when she spouted her parroted wisdom. And the plans were made, and the marriages, and the better jobs, while she, trawling the streets for miracles, became the consciousness zombie. Body moving, comprehension nil. Domicile. Buried, like this. Alive, in grass. Domicile in roots, light and dark has been her round dance. And what did she know of dance, except an aborted section of a minuet in fourth class? The typical half measures of her cracked cup. Not bitter yet, she found principles to uphold. The flat was substandard, she knew, but testing the limits of her remove, she gave herself instructions to transcend. Paupers find it noble to endure their lack. De-wanting. The substandard flat has risen to the surface again in Dublin, apparently. Many people living in very cramped accommodation for high prices. When I moved to Dublin first, there was a kind of countryman who never made the transition from rural to urban. It was as if he was still living in the country, just happened to be in some sort of a container in the city. And this poem is about such a man. Anaerobic. There were still black skies in the spaces between towns. He grew there, like a night flowering plant, petals hard, bent upon themselves, a long-lasting coat from a local shop. His parents fed him bread and closed subjects. The price of things, who died how young, the means to a living. The city is a means, a surrogate vehicle, a lesser wonder womb. The inexpensive, convenient flat is an exercise in caving. Negotiate the local leaders stained by grease and tea, and there's the single bed, dully mined by a once-washed coverlet. There are women, now and then, in their less stagnant pads, but never one who doesn't balk at how his molish head sinks senseless or tunnels, nothing pondered, to the box. He marries, nonetheless, a po-faced woman from back home. In the same frame, they find a house in some functional suburb. Begin there the long plod, the default mode, to oblivion. Well, one of the best things about arriving in the city was eating out. There is, in my sequence, there's a long poem called Eating Out where I describe the number of people in cafes. It's become quite a phenomenon over time, people working in cafes and restaurants because of the mix of anonymity and company. But coming from a rural town where there was nowhere to eat out and you wouldn't even think of doing it, it seemed quite a liberation and a place of possibility. Food Palace. No stain would settle on the cushioned plastic. Coffee could bog and you'd not be disordered. Disappeared only into another gap. Fetch up shining and sharp, whetsome for a raid. No history. You credit the legless consumers with pre-birth hesitation. Pins that have fallen from the hand and will not be placed. The red nudges the blue and they giggle the mirth of the forgotten. You trick the eye with your deft rolls. Old men should be wanderers, and young women. She surprised the asker family name and origin. She has not begun, don't they know, to call herself. She is arty, not artist, servant, uncivil, urbane, rustic, universal Irish, Limerick, in element only. Name her Alpha. The arrow she eats, the eclair, will not keep her in the gross dimension. She waits the pages of her Kafka with a cheap steel tray of condiments. She will not be squared by desk and OPW biro. A stranger will arrive and find her new. The making of a civil servant. In country towns, there are family legends. Your sister never lied. Your granduncle set up the town's branch of the Gaelic League. Your mother is a lady. Your father is a blow-in, an oddball. She was a quiet one, lost in each sensate second. And the volcano throwing up without pre-rumble. The class was a function of unreadable faces, lives she couldn't lead. She drew no conclusions, no lucky straws. A star student, second only to the draper's daughter, whose blonde hair and pink skin went before her like a pillar of light. To think that being human and in this town could look scrubbed as that, a polished glass. The family name, she discovered, pointed to service. Bogula, cowherd. But you needed brains to work for the government. Brains, no cop. Way to go when your intelligence was shy, unfocused, boxed by schooling, romantic perhaps. Or needing to be minded, like hers. Lacking social style and genetic pass, no club would seek her out. Nothing would have pleased her better than to swan across a campus with chin arrogantly set, but some wild things can't fight for position. Failing a college grant, her father had no plan, she no resources. What followed was prison break. A steady income, what a paradox, is independence. Signed herself into the institution. circumscription and official secrecy reduced to what they bought. The drink, the animated talk, the extramurals, the undead hope of relevance. In an earlier poem, Sardines, there was a certain amount of morbid hatred which dissipates over time. So I suppose this poem is the answer to that in a way. There's a line from Patrick Kavanagh's Raglan Road, which I never really liked. When the angel woos the clay, he'll lose his wings at dawn of day. It struck me as creating an artificial hierarchy. But indeed, people who grow up without privilege often tend to be caught, trapped. They never quite get there into the echelons that would allow their talents to blossom. And my father was one of those people, I think, perhaps. Who knows? Who knows how things would have been, because there can only be one way, I guess. The angel woos. The ex-priest left his school for a Kerry cottage, thereby proving he could so love the world. His mind, that might slay a man with one slicing blow, would not be decommissioned, but laid down among the homesteads in an old, ambitious project. Born to cottages herself, and expected to love small worlds baked into faces that burst from the tart ground, she played quiet and swiped at inarticulate heads of flowers. Her intellect deschooled among the green swords, unlike her brother, who gloved on culture worlds. Genes, maybe, held her to the precondition, wizards turning data into acts. She was something like her father, masterless. What wouldn't he have given to belong to Usher's troupe, have the wide sky to walk under and realise the error, instead of shoeless Limerick and a rare taste for Dickens? The link between a ranting father and the heroes is foggy, hard to see through the slammed door to a path beyond. What was she to history but the subatomic text in a mote's eye? Or was that it at all? Shakespeare and Eliot grooved like pop, all sound, no sense. Life goes sing-along, a neglected study. You begin to imitate a cat, clawing back on time. Ask why you did this, not that. Why you wandered clueless when there was so much to achieve and by now you could be somebody. History's habit of repeating, regurgitating, knocks you flat, and you wake atop the same cliff, hanging. So among the clay-faced, little one trying to be big, she's still wandering. The ex-priest never did the distance of her father's early to bed, his labourer's hands clutching Tristram Shandy, or writing to the herald with a chess move, all thinking to be angels in this singularly human groove. And just a few more pieces. This is from part three of Savage Solitude, when the I voice has risen to absorb the one and the other. So we have some reflection, a perceived internal journey, and some aphorisms. 222. Ceasefire. I awake to silence, a stretching, seamless peace. Stunned by fluid ease and the absence of argument, this is a free land. Unstopped. For a brief but wide moment, I know no punctuation, no punching home of the fact of my great lone voyage. Stillness is a shocking thing that you can claim it. Plus, ground minus, before what is, I start to walk, still no landmark. But these visions, a slim woman with short hair crouched pensively on a riverbank, a small girl walking away through tall grass, there at my hand at 100 meters in every direction. Tiny. So what if I'm a lone traveller? It appears that the immense metabolic world doesn't care whether I lie, sit or walk. I'm a microscopic theme. But tiny is mother to large. Firsts. They talk of what's acceptable and forbidden. By whose say? I grew in deserted fields where no voice chased me with data and principle. My conventions were formed by the attitudes of light and the soil that tickled my hands. What comes first stays first. But I listen. Satisfied. A so-called resolved life has difficulties too. From where comes the notion that our lives are not satisfactory? They must be satisfactory. We have nothing else. And I'm going to finish with two poems which I suppose are not really all that similar. This connects with the notion of evolution being both biological and technological. When I was ant. When I was ant, tick, beetle, low scuttling to the grains, a blade of grass was sequoia, not green but seismicity, but red in the eyes, a bulge and a danger, thump of foot no lingered thing, only world changing. So I wrote it. Bird to its back, its decoration, its untied button and its stamp. Whee! I cried, and nothing heard but the ant next door. Now I am large as saplings, pushing out the troposphere, can straighten up and look, there's the real thing. Climb no sequoia though, push down no oak but by two. I am axe, knife, whisk and can opener, cyborg. Then world sends light through my apartment window. Lens of built box, incidental body, dust a boil of dust and drops on the glass, once bright, twice as scant. I am lamped, waiting for the next move. Dream, death or dry wretch. Yellow rises over scope of houses, Grimalkin clouds in its wake, while skin of the planned grass shivers from meddling wind, naked trees wag and bow. Strike peach and pink into the picture, and the room changes. Makes me sequacious, shrinks me to a drop, burns me to hydrogen and burns again. What am I? World butters the sky, spreads on slices of lives, and eats me in this morning moment when I am aardvark, rabbit, badger, city cat, fish in a bowl, everything. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to finish with what I suppose is my very first performance poem, performed in Belfast in 1990. It names some rather intimate body parts, so if anybody objects to that, now's the time to leave. and of course it's in the making of a pagan, which is why I'm doing it tonight. I have revived it. for the purpose of, sorry, it's in, Pagan to the Corp. It was one of those moments that I was trying to represent organically. My hands began it, and now I love it. I've come to sweat it, thinking of it. My hands began it, and now I love it. I've come to sweat it, thinking of it. My hands began it, and now I love it. I come to sweating, thinking of it, thinking of it, thinking of it, tongue on it. A warm ache between my legs, my hands begin, stroke up my breasts are steaming, nipples standing, staring. My hands are drawing the world from the mound of my head to the round of my small toe. Feel my legs. the inside thigh beginning to blush, then shining, then my stomach a mass of tingle. I touch my clit, it sings. I touch as I step inside. I am queen of land, where east meets west. My hands unclose a passage, north to south. My face is full upon me, all of me's my face. All become a globe, the width of my spread legs. And between them, the centre is thickening, the lips are pursing out. I'm speeding up, my hands are driving, my cunt is driving. I'm zooming to my inner space, only one direction. I'm in there, it's blowing out, ballooning out. Myself steering, myself steered, all a flow, all a rush. A tidal wave wet on my fingers, heat running in my thighs, in my tail. My tail is spinning, shaking, swishing. I am the world, taking space, making whirlwinds out of space. I am space, I am spilling in, I am spilling out. I am coming, streaming, steaming, coming, 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 coming,